had me a job down at the local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is ill. I can't pay my bills. The repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, two kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore.
Welcome to the Illinois World Labor Hour. I'm your host, David Johnson, for the November 21st edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour. The views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WFT, its board director, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Okay, and then we have some special guests that's going to be calling in today. The member of the GEO, the Graduate Employees Union at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, Rich Potter. He'll be calling in at half past the hour. And the first part of the hour, we're going to be having a special guest, Jim Eyman, discussing a little bit about our last program in which the executive director of the Americans for Democratic Action called in for an interview. He was actually a little ticked, if you will, about this organization and some of the, statements and answers this guy had. So Jim's going to be here. We invite him on as a sort of a critique. And in the meantime, we've got some underwriting announcements.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour, a Democratic World BMWE, a Democratic Union BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO, Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And we all here in the studio today is also Tom Thomas, who you just heard, Bob Pelesny, and Bill Gorell. And Tom's poem today, heard first time on here on WFT, is "Together They Care." Okay, we're going to go right to some news stories here, and we'll start with Tom.
Stimulus aid, whether it actually exists or not, has sparked an economic boom for some undesirable entrepreneurs. State and federal officials report they are fielding thousands of reports of scam artists, many operating from overseas, using the promise of money from the Obama administration's $787 billion economic recovery plan to entice people to hand over their bank account numbers. The scams are so numerous and the criminals hard to identify that authorities are saying it's next to impossible to catch them. Rip-offs based on current events are nothing new. In the past few months alone, scams have tried to cash in on everything from Michael Jackson's death to the swine flu to foreclosure prevention. Oregon officials warned consumers in August that con men were sending out thousands of emails telling people they were entitled to stimulus money from the IRS, and all they had to do was provide their bank account number. In another scheme reported in New York State, a telephone caller promised $1,000 worth of free groceries for any person willing to provide their credit card number to pay a small processing fee. Exactly how many people have been conned is impossible to measure, but the numbers are likely very substantial. Detectives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, concocted a stimulus scheme of their own. In August, they mailed letters to people wanted for crimes, ranging from failure to pay child support to attempted murder, saying they were eligible for stimulus checks. When 76 of them showed up to claim their money, police officers were waiting and snapped on the handcuffs instead.
Yeah, this is Bill. All of you who spend a lot of time on the internet have seen a lot of these things, and there's constantly ads popping up on pages about Obama wanting to give you money to go to school, Obama wanting to get you to bail out your debt, and they use the term stimulus, and they use the terms bailout. And I don't know. I think they're just insulting to my intelligence. You know, I don't get where they see that people are really going to fall for this, like the Nigerian scams.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, Dave. I got a story here from actually from the New York Times and their labor correspondent reporter Stephen Greenhouse, and this story says labor fight ends in win for students. The anti-sweatshop movement at dozens of American universities from Georgetown to UCLA has had plenty of idealism and energy, but not many victories, until now. The often raucous student movement announced on Tuesday that it achieved its biggest victory by far, as pressure tactics persuaded one of the nation's leading sportswear companies, Russell Athletic, to agree to rehire 1,200 workers in Honduras who lost their jobs when Russell closed their factory soon after the workers had unionized. From the time Russell shut the factory last January, the anti-sweatshop coalition orchestrated a nationwide campaign against the company. Most important, the coalition, United Students Against Sweatshops, persuaded the administrations of Boston College, Columbia, Harvard, New York University, Stanford, Michigan, North Carolina, and 89 other colleges and universities to sever or suspend their licensing agreements with Russell. The agreements, some yielding more than $1 million in sales, allowed Russell to put university logos on T-shirts, sweatshirts, and fleeces. And going beyond their campuses, student activists picketed the NBA Finals in Orlando and Los Angeles this year to protest the league's licensing agreement with Russell. They distributed flyers inside Sports Authority sporting goods stores and sent Twitter messages to customers of Dick's Sporting Goods to urge them to boycott Russell products. The students even sent activists to knock on Warren Buffett's door in Omaha because his company, Berkshire Hathaway, owns Fruit of the Loom, Russell's parent company. It's a very important breakthrough, says Mel Tenen, who oversees licensing agreements for the University of Miami, the first school to sever ties with Russell. It's not often that a major licensee will take such a necessary and drastic step to correct the injustices that affected its workers. This paves the way for us to seriously consider reopening our agreement with Russell. Other colleges are expected to do the same. Analysts say the college market occupies a significant part of Russell's business. Because Fruit of the Loom does not detail Russell's sales, it is not known how large a part. In its agreement, not only did Russell agree to reinstate the dismissed workers and open a new plant in Honduras as a unionized factory, it also pledged not to fight unionization at its 7 existing factories there. In a statement Russell released jointly with the Apparel Workers Union in Honduras, the company said the agreement was intended to foster workers' rights in Honduras and establish a harmonious relationship. This agreement represents a significant achievement in the history of the apparel sector in Honduras and Central America, the joint statement said. In the past, the Honduran workers condemned and fired 145 workers in 2007 for supporting a union. Union's Vice President Norman Mejia said at a Berkshire Hathaway shareholders meeting last May that helping lead the union. Russell denied the assertion. Union leaders and the economy has been hit by a political crisis over who will lead it. This is in no way an overnight victory. It came after 10 years of building a movement that persuaded scores of universities to adopt detailed codes of conduct for the factories used by the licensees like Russell. In addition, the students sometimes, through lengthy sit-ins, pressured their officials. To create and finance independent.
I got on a crusade on this about 3 or 4 years ago on the old WEFT email list, and all we have to, and it turned out after I did a bunch of research and writing and work that all we have to do is ask the printer to use American made shirts. So whoever is involved with this, would you please keep that in mind? Because I get complaints from people that I work with even. When I do work.
Hey, according to the Treasury Department's Inspector General for Tax Administration, more than 15 million taxpayers could end up owing the IRS money in the spring. The economic stimulus package enacted in February provided a tax credit of $400 for individuals and $800 for married couples. The IRS was instructed to adjust withholding tables so that workers would receive a small increase in their paychecks. Social Security beneficiaries got a one-time payment of $250. But millions of taxpayers may have received a larger credit than they were entitled to because the IRS's revised withholding tables did not take into account certain specific circumstances, such as workers with more than one job, dual-income couples, retirees who receive a pension, and Social Security beneficiaries who have earned incomes. As a result, some 15,400,000 taxpayers could unexpectedly owe money when they filed their 2009 returns in the spring of 2010. According to IRS spokeswoman Michelle Eldridge, the IRS has said that the Inspector General's numbers are overstated. Most taxpayers who receive an excess credit will see a lower refund instead of a tax bill. However, even a smaller-than-expected refund could be a major problem for those taxpayers who count on that check from the IRS every spring. Many, if not most, taxpayers count on that money to pay their holiday bills. According to Ms. Eldridge, taxpayers who think they might have a problem and don't want to wait until they owe or see a smaller refund can either change their withholding for the rest of the year or make an estimated tax payment by January 15th of 2010.
Oh, by the way, I want to say hi to Neil Parthon, who's just commented on my status on Facebook, saying he's listening to the show. I'm currently monitoring Facebook. If you have any questions or comments, go ahead and write them on my wall or whatever. And if you're not a friend of mine on Facebook, go ahead and send me a friend request. That would be Bill Gorrell, Bill G-O-R-R-E-L-L.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Graduate Employee Organization at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus went on strike Monday to secure tuition waivers for graduate employees. The Grad Student Employee Bargaining Unit of 2700 is represented by the American Federation of Teachers, Illinois Federation of Teachers, Local 6300. Local 6300 spokesman Peter Campbell says that a bargaining session is scheduled for Tuesday morning, and it's possible a settlement could be reached in that session.
If the administration is willing to extend some protection to out-of-state tuition waivers as well and allow the GEO to bargain the impact of any changes, then I would be hopeful. If the administration is really unwilling to do that, then I would be less optimistic.
The GEO says without both in-state and out-of-state tuition waivers, diversity on campus will suffer, and foreign students would see tuition absorb nearly all their wages. The GEO says giving in on tuition credits would transform the character of campus departments by hurting the diversity that it says is the lifeblood of campus intellectual life. The GEO says that, in turn, would allow the corporate university to trump the faculty's role in shaping curriculum, because departments able to get grants to fund tuition would draw maximum support, while others would be downsized or eliminated. A plan that...
Now we're to that point in the show with the Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas's new poem of the week, Together They Care.
There is one American right that cannot be taken away, the right to work in unity, whether teaching or pitching hay. It was the way our land was built, with different workers unified. It was how we achieved our goals to build this land where we abide. When patricians wanted castles, the builders wanted more fair pay. Eventually the unions came and every worker had a say. It was the way our land was built, as shoulder to shoulder we stood. For better than a century, most unions have done so much good. They have not done that good by, they have done that good by striking for what they felt was just and fair. They've stood to picket together because all together they care. You'll hear no pounding of hammers at projects that are not yet done. The screeching saws will be silent until the union's plight is won. Graduate employees now march for their jobs to be just and fair. And many students won't be taught as long as GEO's not there. We all should support our brothers and sisters on the picket line, for they embody tradition that forevermore needs to shine. Together They Care was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois, November 16, 2009, and was first recited live November 21, 2009, on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I have one public service announcement here. That'd be Monday, November 23rd from 12:30 to 2 p.m. At the Champaign County Courthouse in downtown Urbana. The National Day of Outrage event will be happening, and this is sponsored locally by CU Citizens for Peace and Justice. And this is an event organized by Al Sharpton, and it's about police murders of many youth across the country, primarily African-American. So we've got, unfortunately, a local instance to really hit home with us with the shooting of... Dare I say murder of Kiwan
Carrington.
Yes, Kiwan Carrington. And
murder is the right word.
Okay. Well, of course, we'll see about the state police report that will be coming out. But nevertheless, turnout for that. That's the national day, part of the National Day of Outrage, this Monday, November 23rd from 12:30 to 2 at the Champaign County Courthouse in downtown Urbana. Mm-hmm.
lazy. We'd have to be crazy for signing that contract. And we'd be crazy, yes, crazy, the minute we do. They thought that they could stick us with terms they dictated, and then stonewall till we gave up, caved in, or fell through. Worried, yes, we're sane enough to feel worried.
Okay, that was Paul Kottheimer with Contract Craziness, and it's a little compilation here that Bob Pelesny put together for the show in honor of the GEO. We're going to be playing some more off that here momentarily. Okay, so next we want to go to fellow worker Jim Iman. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me back on the show.
I want to put a little plug in. Jim's a co-host with me on the Urbana Public Television Public Access program Labor's View, which is on every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. And we just did a broadcast. We did an interview with Rich Potter on the show. What did you think of it?
I thought it was one of the best shows we've ever did. It's hot. Of course, the issue's hot. Mm-hmm. And I think you're in some of the film footage, Carrie.
Yeah.
But certainly Bill Gorel is with his camera.
Yes, indeed, out front of the Swan Administration building.
I'm surprised you could keep up with those guys marching, Bill. God, they were running rather than walking.
I suggest Dr. Seuss acupuncture to quit smoking.
Okay. Well, that... excuse me, that choked me up. Anyway, listen, there was film footage put together by Joe Galicia from the GEO, which we played on Labor's View, along with the interview with Rich Potter, and it's just a very, very excellent, well-done video, and I know Labor Beat in Chicago has been emailed to him, and I talked with Larry Duncan this morning, and he was just really impressed. He said it was all he's going to have to do is put a title and an intro on it, and it'll be ready to go.
Right.
So you're here today mainly because of last week's show, which I was over at a labor conference at the University of Illinois, in which there was a guest that called in from the Americans for Democratic Action, yes. ADA. Bob, what was the director's name? I can't remember.
Michael J. Wilson.
Michael J. Wilson. Okay.
Executive director.
Okay, just a little background. I'd never heard of him. They called about somebody from their office from Washington, D.C., called me at home about 3-4 weeks ago and asked if they could have an interview that they heard about us somehow, you know, probably all with the Internet or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, usually our policy is that somebody wants to come on the show, you know, especially somebody from, you know, out of state or whatever, we let them come on. We had the CEO of Sirius Materials come on, the energy efficient company that bought out Republic Windows and stuff. And it's kind of unusual, but anyway, yes, and so there was an interview, and were a little upset about his position.
No need to apologize for having him on.
Yeah.
The problem is, you know, we have to understand the history of the Americans for Democratic Action. It's true they began in 1947, but the object of the exercise was to derail the campaign of Henry A. Wallace, third-party candidate, Franklin Roosevelt's vice president. And as vice president, he was not one of the cold warriors. And already the Democratic Party, even before World War II was over, was thinking Cold War against the Soviet Union. So neither Wallace, the progressive or labor forces in America, wanted a Cold War. Certainly Stalin didn't want a Cold War. And, of course, we went right after our ally, Stalin, you know, even before the war was over.
So you're saying that this was a group that was primarily formulated as the right wing of the Democratic Party, or less?
No. They attacked
Eleanor Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
Hubert Humphrey.
Eleanor Roosevelt, I think, knew, but I think she distanced herself. But Humphrey, yes, guns and butter Humphrey. You know, if you remember his campaign.
I barely do. I was in grade school, but
yeah,
yes.
right. Mr. Guns and Butter. And
basically saying that we could have both, right?
Well, we can have both. So, you know, they have a history of supporting the Vietnam War, but more importantly, their job has been to be the attack dogs of any third party on the left. So they challenge ballot signatures of any party that runs on the left. And I have personal experience since I ran for Congress in 1964.
From where at? From Milwaukee?
3rd Congressional District of Milwaukee.
Okay.
For the old seat held by the first socialist elected to Congress, Victor Berger. And I remember Victor Berger, although a lot of criticisms can be given of the Socialist Party at that time, Victor Berger used the term for the capitalist class to extirpate the miserable brood. Extirpate, I love it. Anyway.
Yeah. So now, fast forward to the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the ADA challenged my signatures. Mm-hmm. They challenged the signatures of the Socialist Party, the Socialist Workers' Party. I ran as a Socialist Workers' Party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
They challenged the signatures of the Communist Party, although not seriously, because the CP in the last instance always supported the Democrats anyway. But they only ran at, you know, Gus Hall and, you know, et cetera, Browder. Just as token candidates to say, oh, what do you mean we don't support independent political action for labor?
Uh-huh.
You know, but, you know, after there are rallies, well, you know, a few of us should vote communist to, you know, to keep us on the ballot. But by God, you know, the Democrats are the better of the two evils. So, you know, that Stalinism essentially is lesser evil politics.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who believes in lesser evil politics, to me, is a Stalinist. So they challenged ballots as mm-hmm. signatures for everybody. I mean, they were so bad as they would ring doorbells of people who signed our ballots and
no
would
kidding.
Harass them.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, I mean, they are the attack dogs for the left wing of the Democratic Party.
For the left wing?
Well, yeah. I mean, they
against the left wing of the
No. The left wing. They are the left wing of the Democratic Party.
Okay, I see what
you're
saying.
And the left wing of the Democratic Party are attack dogs on the real left.
Okay, I see your point. Okay.
See, now not only this, they supported the Vietnam War until the election of Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Actively supported, harassed the anti-war movement.
Mm-hmm.
Supported, as Paul Muth, since I was talking to him before, knows full well too, that they supported only the right-wing trade unions in Latin America. Their history is nefarious.
Mm-hmm.
You
okay.
know, for them to call them, but then again, you know, I mean, I got myself in trouble down there at the Debs dinner by quoting Debs that all you know, you don't need to say a person is a prostitute. You don't have to say a person's an opportunist. All you have to do is say they're a Democrat.
Oh, okay.
No offense to sex workers, please.
Okay. Who are, by the way, organized by IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, and SCIU, at least in the West Coast. But anyway, okay, you know, go ahead.
Can I just finish? Well, Bill, you know, on the tube this week, I found out that your Labor's International Union, which holds over 80 pension funds, has the pension fund manager is this guy named Richard Medcalf, and they put all their funds into what were supposedly AAA rated stocks in Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, etc., and they lost everything. Not only are you not working, you know, I don't think anybody's going to get a pension.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm definitely not surprised, and our annuity, which for 10 years that we've had it, had usually gained 6% a year through its investments, lost money last year. I couldn't believe it.
Yes, I'll tell you, you know, I was on the show, but I was able to, Bob burned a copy of the show from last week, and I was able to preview it finally last night. And I thought Bill asked some really tough questions of Michael J. Wilson,
yes.
Which he didn't have an answer for. I mean, I particularly could appreciate the question, well, I don't have time to wait, you know, because he kept saying, we always take a long-term view on this, and it's not going to, you know, it's a long-distance run, and blah, 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 and maybe Bill could elaborate a little bit.
Well, I was just out in the library looking for Love Me, I'm a Liberal by Phil Oakes,
yes.
But I couldn't find it. I just, you know, it's where is our civilian energy corps, you know, getting prevailing wage at least our residential prevailing wage, which isn't that bad. It's I believe laborers is 65%, you know, and being out insulating, weatherproofing poor people's houses so they don't have to pay such high heat bills.
Yes, that reminds me of another point you were talking about is you mentioned about Obama getting ready to convene some kind of job creation conference, and Bill goes, I don't want to just hear Obama talk about creating jobs. I want to see him create some jobs, you know. And I'm telling you, Bill, that was really excellent because both times he didn't have an answer for you. I mean, so anyway, Jim, just to kind of wrap up here before we go to our special guest here in the studio from the Graduate Employees Union, some last comments about the ADA or whatever about last week's show?
Well, I do have a comment in general.
Uh-huh.
If we're not going to be able to organize unions at all unless the Taft-Hartley Act is repealed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there should be a march on Washington by the every union in the country.
How's the Employee Free Choice Act fit into this?
It just scratches the surface. Uh-huh. I don't think it even draws blood.
Okay.
Not, we have to support it because it's something, I suppose.
A baby step.
Although
yeah.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Kucinich and Bernie Sanders voted against it, and I would support them doing it.
The same way for the wrong reasons.
With the so-called health care reform.
Yes.
You know,
that was interesting. Back in the 2000 election, I supported Ralph Nader, and one of the reasons was because I got in some trouble for it, but nevertheless, I support him because in addition to wanting to repeal NAFTA and other corporate trade treaties, he wanted to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act, and you didn't hear Al Gore wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Yet he's supposed to be our friend,
yeah.
You know. But anyway, Jim, thank you so much, and please stay in the studio because with our special guest here, I'd love for you to jump in with some questions and everything. And we're going to take just a quick musical break, and we'll go right to our interview. Okay, we're back. You heard some audio footage from the GEO rally out in front of Swarland Administration Building this last Monday, and then that was followed by Utah Phillips, There Is Power in the Union. So on that note, we will turn now to our honored guest, Carrie Pimblott from the Graduate Employees Union here in Urbana-Champaign, University of Illinois. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. It's nice to see everybody.
Yes. Now, this is an incredible story, and we had, as I mentioned earlier in the show, on Labor's View, we had Rich Potter on the show, and I commented to him, and I'm going to likewise comment to you, that I think this GEO quick, decisive victory against the intransigence of the U of I administration ranks right up there with Republic Windows and Doors victory last year.
Wow. That's a compliment. I don't know if I would take it that far.
Well, I would, because you know what? This is a model for the labor movement. This is something we've been seeing for the last 20, 30 years, where American labor has just been taking defeat after defeat after defeat, and a lot of times it's because the leadership isn't willing to fight to win, and they're not mobilizing their membership, and oftentimes actually collaborating,
yeah.
and one concessionary contract after another. Now, from what I was talking with Rich, Rich on the television show, you guys actually were had started planning this back last spring, right?
Actually, yeah, maybe even before that. I became co-president 2 years ago, and I was co-president before I became lead negotiator. And I specifically came in as co-president because I knew with the financial crisis that we would need to organize in very explicit ways our members around a work action, which we had never threatened before, seriously, and would require a change of consciousness on the part of our members. So I deliberately became co-president at that point with my friend John Gurgley, who's now in New York, organizing out in New York in the CUNY system with academic workers out there, that we had to very consciously organize for a work action. So this has been in the works for a long time, because we knew making any gains without a work action would be very difficult. And that actually turned out to be much more true than I thought, because they made no movement at the table before we threatened a work action.
Yeah, I just want to say that I have seen other unions use tactics like yours, but they waited until too late, such as the Staley workers.
Yeah, no, this, and actually I have felt that had been the case in the past, but we've been in better financial times. So we had managed to make gains without going to an actual strike vote, just with the intent to strike vote. But I think everybody who was in leadership that year, which is like the 2008, 2009 year, 2007, 2008 year, had the same kind of thought in mind, that we needed to really ramp up. And also we needed to mass mobilize, because it's harder to do than it appears. You know, I mean, to get 1,000 people on board in the Midwest, in Champaign, around organizing for a work action actually is really difficult, especially in organizations that mobilize around professional workers, because the ideology is totally different. Most of the people don't even consider themselves to be workers. They didn't until recently.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you what, you guys, I was around at your birth, so to speak, not your personal birth.
Because that would be incredible.
GEO's birth about 10 years ago when in order to get recognition, they occupied the administration building on the quad. And I remember going, at that time I was vice president of the local AFL-CIO Champaign County. I remember going over there the next morning. You guys occupied it during the late afternoon, early evening. Went over the next morning. The U of I police were out in the lobby, but they weren't, you know, they let me pass, no problem. And it looked like they even brought you guys coffee and donuts and stuff. So the U of I knew that they had to, to kind of take a little easy action there. But nevertheless, I mean, since your victory on winning union recognition 10 years ago, I've seen GEO, they're very, I mean, dynamic and valuable asset to the labor community here in Champaign-Urbana, and always, you know, out supporting other people and on the side of progressive causes.
Oh, I'd also like to mention that the founder of this program, Peter Miller, was also a founder of the GEO. And I remember photographing the meeting where they voted to go with the IFT instead of the IEA. Sorry about that, Gene.
Well, actually, speaking of which, I happened to talk to Gene Vanderport yesterday, and he wanted to organize GEO so bad, but unfortunately, his leadership in Springfield didn't want to organize GEO.
Well,
if you can imagine that.
Gene Vanderport has been an incredible personal encouragement to me. I mean, he is an excellent organizer and has probably been on the Labor Coalition our most staunch advocate, you know, on campus. And so he's been irrespective of what went down with IFT-IEA, as being one of our best advocates and has really helped us organize.
Yeah, he was there at the occupation, too. I remember him being there with all you guys 10 years ago.
I was a graduate assistant with Gene's son at Illinois State back in the 80s, and we were getting $600 a month. We needed a union.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a good point, Bill. What were the Rich mentioned you had four pillars of demands. Of course, the tuition waiver seems the one that came across loudest and clearest, but it was also about wages and a couple other issues, right?
Yeah, so we actually decided as a bargaining team early on in the process to make this very open and democratic for members in terms of what we selected to be in the contract. And I think advice for anybody negotiating a contract right now would be to make it a very streamlined bargaining platform that represents the interests of your members. And then maybe include some non-monetary things in there too that you can use and maybe secure in a bad financial time. So we had four pillars, and they represented kind of the interests of the majority of our members and then also some of the particular interests of the most marginalized members of our bargaining unit. And so that was increased access and affordability to childcare. and parental rights more generally, increased access to affordable and better coverage in our healthcare, and then also the living wage and tuition waiver security. In fact, tuition waiver security was not the most central demand mm-hmm. until we realized just how extreme the university interest in pursuing our tuition waivers was, which came about pretty much towards the end of the contract negotiations. Mm-hmm. They had been insisting since we organized earlier in the year around them removing tuition waivers, which they had an intention to do. They had no intention anymore of doing that. But it became apparent when we bargained the issue that actually they did want that. And I think it was fortunate for us that actually ended up being the case mm-hmm. Because it meant that we could secure a victory that would have national implications. And I really am looking into it now for the kind of historical precedent that this sets, establishing tuition waiver security as a condition of employment. But I believe this will be trend-setting across the nation. And as you can see what's going on in California right now, it's prescient.
Yes, in fact, that's what I wanted to mention here next. You kind of beat me to it here a little bit. But I've got two personal communications. There's two personal communications. I got an email from a friend and comrade I have out, and he's out in L.A. right now. And I just want to read these here real quick about the student strikes out there. He goes, I was up there today, must have left before this happened. It says, the mood seemed to have hardened a bit today. I think it was partly due to the university regents, the Board of Governors, having voted to increase institute the 32% student fee increase, but I also think it was partly just due to having been out in a protest for the last 3 days. Most important, it was clear from looking around that there's a whole new layer of students getting active. You could see that many were not the typical left youth activists. In fact, I spoke with several who told me this was their first political event.
Yeah.
He said, equally impressive is the fact that these youth were particularly in a fairly militant action. The students had set up pickets in the at the four corners of the building that was occupied, but these were not the typical symbolic pickets. What they did was link arms and refuse to let anybody pass through. Of course, this in itself was somewhat symbolic in that they could go around, but still, this act of defiance by newcomers to protesting was impressive. Not only that, but they actually physically restricted those who tried to crash through, pushing and shoving. One or two fights did nearly result. And then he gave an update later on that day. Comrades, the occupation of the building here at UC Berkeley, I'm sorry, this is in Berkeley, not LA, is still going on. We have surrounded the exits to the building, and the students inside are still there. Some of us just barged through security and entered the Bancroft Library, where we heard the cops were going to sneak them out. We tried to get out before the cops came and got us. The youth are inspiring. They are challenging the law, occupying property and the system itself in a way. The gloves are off. Just because the millionaire regents voted to cut jobs and education doesn't mean they'll do it. The union leadership, obsessed with obeying the law, are a disgrace. The youth are showing them what should be done, and rank and file workers must recognize that we cannot win unless we challenge and violate their laws and their system itself. Now, fortunately, it didn't come to that here. However, I think partly, I mean, we got differences in political governance in California and Illinois. However, I think you guys, it was interesting, not only mobilized your membership, but you also knew where to hit them and when to hit them.
Yeah, I think in some of it, we couldn't have planned for it. There was a lot of planning in advance, but what you said here made me think two things. I think, one, the fact that they have a broad-based coalition of people now. It's not just radicals. There's also people that have traditionally not been engaged in labor organizing. That's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm hoping this signals, and I think we saw this in GEO too. I mean, people I was organizing with have maybe very different personal politics than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But yet at this moment around the tuition waiver security issue and this kind of corporatization of the university, people formed a broad-based coalition. So I'm hoping it's a sign of things in academic organizing that's kind of like a New Deal coalition where mm-hmm. you have radicals working with more liberal, kind mm-hmm. of progressive-minded people.
Sure. Yes.
And then the other piece on the corporatization, mm-hmm. I think that's what's kind of most compelling about this, is that people are now directly addressing the corporatization of the university and the failure of the government to allocate sufficient funding because they're in cahoots with business, you know, mm-hmm. in that respect, and haven't got the political will. In California, I think the difference is that you see that the state hasn't got the power to raise taxes. And so you're seeing the Board of Regents being put in a situation where they're making this decision against mm-hmm. the interests of the workers, but at the same time, you know, very limited alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Illinois, there's a little bit more flexibility. I mean, we don't have the progressive taxation that we could have, and it's mm-hmm. probably going to be difficult to secure that. But at least there's the ability to raise taxes, and hopefully they will. So, you know, it's a difficult situation to be in, but I am heartened by the fact that in both contexts, and hopefully more broadly. Students are stepping up and workers are stepping up and saying that they will organize collectively around public institutions.
Yes, and I believe that the Democrats are in control of pretty much everything back in, I believe it was 1970 when I was in junior high school, and they had a constitutional convention and wrote into the constitution of this state that we cannot have a progressive income tax. Ridiculous. And it's not that hard to change, but don't every politician will tell you that it is.
Yes, you know what I was really impressed with too is watching the video footage of the lively active demonstration outside the Swanland administration building on Monday when I believe it was Rich Potter was speaking.
That's right. I
was really impressed that besides articulating your needs and demands for you know your legitimate needs and demands, he also brought in wider issues here, and that is access to higher learning, as well as the whole issues of corporatization and privatization
and
in
I
the universities.
Say, this is probably for me the most important piece is that a lot of people that organized through GEO, there was over 1,000 people participating in the picketing. Many of those people would not directly benefit from the contract, except for in terms of tuition waiver security. Many of them don't have children. They also already make a living wage and would not see benefits in their wages as a result of this. So what that suggests to me and what I said on the last day of our negotiations to our membership is that what's most important about this is not the contract gains per se. I mean, it's good to build our institution and protect our workers in any way we can through a contract, but it's the change in consciousness that people had on a mass level, that we mass mobilized and that people began to see themselves as workers and not just as professionals training for a field, as little interns for a field.
By the way, folks, Franklin Ridgway has just chatted to me here on Facebook, and he says that Kerry Pemblot is his hero. he hopes that historians will remember our struggle here as a world historical event. He also wants to know what GEO members can do for solidarity with our comrades in California. And we'll give a shout-out to El Otro Sur, North America's only radio program dedicated to the music of Argentina. Ah, probably got some good tango stuff on there, which is a big thing now. But, yeah, let's go to... what can GEO members do in solidarity with our comrades in California?
So I've already seen on our Facebook group that and as soon as the California piece was starting, people in the union wanted to express solidarity. So I mean specific ways. I mean expressing directly from our union the fact that we support them. We sent people, you know, to other unions during their contract negotiations. I hope the same will be this time. I mean we have people from Michigan here during our negotiations, and also people from TAA up in Wisconsin and from Michigan State. So directly sending people, but I think more broadly keeping up this argument that the university needs to kind of check itself on the corporatization, that we need a better administration, and that all universities need to, and all university workers and students need to step up to the plate and represent their interests and what kind of universities they'd like to work at and what public institutions should be like. That's the battle that has to continue. And I think only through doing it at our own campuses can we express true solidarity, because by themselves they cannot really do anything. But collectively across the country, we can be a movement. So I think that's probably continuing the battle, not just letting the contract negotiations be the end of the story.
Yes, indeed.
I am a historian, too. So I will do my part in making sure that we remember. And this is the nice piece about being a historian, is we get to control the narrative. So in making sure the narrative is remembered the accurate way. And definitely we're already, the bargaining team had 5 historians on it. All of us do African-American history. And we're all working to document this now to make sure that it resonates after it happened.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Okay. You know, and also another the issue that seemed to come out and in your demands was the whole thing about health care and child care. Now, what would be interesting is if we had national health care in this country, like most every civilized country in the world, does, and even some lesser developed countries, this wouldn't even be an issue that the university would have to deal with. Likewise, child care.
Yeah.
I mean, also access to higher education in Western Europe and even in South America. I mean, well, I know in Western Europe, because my wife's a German national, that education is free from preschool to all the way to the PhD level.
Yeah. Some of this is ironic that I've had to be in English, be negotiating a contract.
Okay. Let's see who this is right now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Caroline, the
Caroline.
Co-president. And I'm also calling to say that Carrie Pimblatt is my hero as well, and that we couldn't have done this without her.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling in and stuff. There was a bunch of applause there, so could you state your name again and your affiliation?
This is Caroline. I'm the GEO co-president, one of them, with Ingbert Floyd.
Okay.
And hi, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Oh.
Sorry, he didn't have his headphones on.
I lent my headphones to Carrie, and hi, Caroline, and I really love coming to your events and photographing all of you wonderful people.
Yeah, I can't wait to see all the pictures from last week.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do have Monday's pictures with me today. Should I give them to Carrie, or what do you think?
Well, you can ask her, but, don't worry about it. I think we're all going to take a few days off to...
Yeah, you deserve it.
Yes, yeah. Well-deserved a few days off, for sure. Yes, I'll tell you what, I was, if you're listening earlier, I'm serious about this. I think the comparison of Republic Windows and Doors last year is absolutely accurate. You shouldn't be, too modest in realizing that and accepting it. I just say that this is a model for the labor movement nationwide, and, it's just, I've just been so impressed with GE over the years in this latest incident. I'm just so glad it was that you guys acted so proactively, so decisively, mobilized your membership, and it was over in a very quick time, even though the weather was really lousy when the 2 days you were out there, that's for sure. But I was telling earlier in the show that footage from the rally outside of the Swanland administration building is just excellent, and that's been posted to YouTube. So anybody can download it, and it's really, really, it's 8 minutes, and it's very, very energetic and exciting.
Yeah, we have I think there's a really great range of, media and documentation of the event. I mean, with photographs and video and radio, and it's really exciting. And that's probably going to be an ongoing project into the next semester, is putting together, some kind of repository of, the year the GEO went on strike.
Yes, indeed, and I was also very, very impressed of how you were so quickly and effectively used the media, not just locally, but nationwide. You were mentioned twice on Democracy Now!, and I believe there was even a little bit of corporate news coverage, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and that's certainly a tribute to our communications committee, and particularly our communications officer Peter Campbell, and then Rich Potter, who they were just really on top of that. And on Monday, I was in the office for most of the day, and the phone was ringing off the hook. Everybody and their grandma was calling the theater.
Speaking of grandmas, I know when we had Rich Potter on Labor's View, when we were complimenting him.
Where are we going with grandmas?
He said, well, we have a saying in GEO, that this is not your grandfather's union anymore, where Jim Iman said, well, it may not be your grandfather's union, but it looks definitely a lot like your great-great-grandfather's union brought to the high-tech era. And I think what he meant by that was the mobilizing the membership, the basic democracy of GEO, and your militancy and activism.
Class consciousness.
And class consciousness. Thank you, Jim. That a very important one there that Carrie, of course, was addressing.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Carrie, and that's something that I think has been something that we've had to work on for a long time, is getting people not to just see themselves as graduate students, but as employees and as contingent. And hopefully that's we're just going to keep moving with that sense, how we fit into the university.
I think it needs to, Caroline, with faculty really changing the campus. It requires that not just contingent workers begin to organize on an unprecedented level, and that's probably going to be one of the biggest struggles, I would imagine, just because of the nature of the work that they do and their compensation. But in terms of transforming the university and democratizing the university and getting corporate interests out, it probably isn't possible without the support of faculty. And so I was very encouraged to see the numbers of faculty out on the picket lines. And I'm hoping that they take this opportunity to begin organizing on an unprecedented level at the university.
Yeah, Caroline, this is Bill. And I'm really glad to see this, too, because you've showed that direct action gets the goods. And besides that, I'm hoping that you all carry on this consciousness into your further work life and your professions.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, hopefully none of us are just going to be content to sit on our laurels and just tell stories.
Carolyn, thanks so much for calling in. And Carrie, thank you so much for coming down
thank
to the studio today. We're going to leave you with some of the audio.
There were two things I wanted to get out. Number one is Carl Estabrook suggests that people go to salon.com and read Glenn Greenwald's article on auditing the Federal Reserve. Number two, I had this flash last night while I was watching Alexander Coburn on Free Speech TV talk about people in debt in the United States. We need a debtors' union. And what we would do is organize this debtors' union, and we would organize payment strikes and severely hurt the cash flow of these banks that are hurting our cash flow.
Well, that sounds good. So tune in again next week for another edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, and we're going to leave you with some audio of the GEO strike. This happened last Monday and Tuesday. The first is GEO Strike Workers United, which was in front of the auditorium, and then also again the Swan Loon rally. So tune in next week for another edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour.
GEO Speedwagon.